tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Sorry. We have a great show for you tonight. This is really going to be a lot of fun. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
Doing good, Jeff. We have some fantastic guests for us today. Definitely want to mention some of our upcoming guests that we have coming. We have Electro Harmonics coming up. We'll be talking about a giveaway with that. We have Celestia on April 15th. We have Denny Tedesco, right?
He did the movie. His father was Tommy Tedesco, one of the most famous studio guitarists.
The Wrecking Crew, right?
The Wrecking Crew.
And we also have Eminent Speakers, Taylor Guitars, Wampler Pedals, Analog Man, quite a lot
of interesting stuff, and a couple of other guests that are coming up that are related to our guest tonight. So, but what have you been up to? You have another video out.
Yeah, I just finished a video. It's a video on how to put strap locks on a guitar. It's a simple step by step. Nothing too crazy, but it's about as crazy as I get. Because as we mentioned before, I don't really modify my guitars, but I don't want to drop them and break the headstock, so I do at least put a strap lock on it.
I was shocked because it was your Les Paul tribute. I didn't think you'd touch that one, but that was kind of interesting that you did modify that.
Well, it's just a screw. I can put it back.
So. I think I'm rubbing off on him. It's like, because I'm the guy that mods everything.
No. Well, and I also want to mention to our listeners, we will be taking callers. If you want to call in at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, if you want to call and ask a question to our guests, or you can join us on our chat room on flowguitarenthusiast.com, and you can click the live chat option. We actually have one of our guests actually in the chat room with us, so you can harass him live.
I also want to make a couple of quick announcements. Today is Debbie American's birthday. I want to wish her a happy birthday. Those American Girls at www.thoseamericangirls.com have been really helpful in getting the word out, talking about our show, and they're really good friends, and they're the people that I did a couple of guitar sessions for them for their last album, Those American Girls First. And I actually did another session for them. They're working on a rock operetta, which should be really interesting. So I did some guitar tracks, and I'll be posting some information about that, what I did, if I'm going to, what I was using and stuff on that. Oh, it'll be on the flowguitarenthusiast.com website. And then also, quickly, for totally selfish family reasons, my nephew Mark, it's his 21st birthday. And I'm going to go take some Geritol because I feel really old right now. But anyway, I just want to wish him a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Gentleman Jack, that's where you need to start.
Okay, before I start introducing our guests and talking about them, I want to play this one clip for you, and then I will explain. Here we go.
You spread your wings and left us behind. You tried to tell me.
So I'd like to introduce tonight our very, I've known them for years. I've watched, I know one of the guests since he was knee-high to a grasshopper, Jean-Pierre Durand and Lisa Carbe. You probably know them most by their band Incendio with Jim Stubblefield. But tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to get into some of the other things that they have done. Because besides doing Incendio, they both produce songwriting. They've written stuff for television. They've produced other artists, at least 50, last count. And their background, most people don't, again, because everybody hears Incendio, don't realize that JP, his background's rock and blues. That's how I look at him, because that's how I've known him, as a rocker and blues player. But even she has a degree in classical guitar and is a guitarist, though in Incendio she primarily plays bass. So for more information, too, I just want to mention their site, CarbeDurand.com, where they talk about their productions and all the stuff outside of the Incendio experience. So anyway, I want to welcome them to the show. Thank you guys so much for being here. It's just really great to have you guys here.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, guys.
So what we're going to do today is, or tonight, we're going to talk about some of your production techniques. We're going to get into detail. I have a bunch of clips. I'm going to use two albums that they've done. That the first is Lisa's solo album that came out last year in 2012. And some amazing guitar work and some stuff outside of the normal character of Incendio that you do, which is more of a Latin flavor. And then also another album that I really like a lot, and most people do not realize that it's out, that you guys actually did this, and that is your rock blues band, the Red Mystics. So we're going to do like the first half an hour or so, we're going to talk about Lisa's album is a lot more mellower, a lot of acoustic guitar, a lot of interesting tracks, and we're going to talk about production. And then the rest of the show, we'll get into the rocking stuff, and probably for most Incendio fans have never heard the true, to me, it's the true Incendio. No, anyway, just kidding. But anyway, so I want to play a clip real quick, another clip, and then we'll talk about the guitars. And actually, JP hasn't heard these clips. I mean, he knows the album and Lisa. So I'm going to kind of quiz them put them on the spot a little bit. They have to remember what they were using and how they did it. Okay. So here's another clip. This is a song called She Still Loves You. And the name of the album is Wait for the Spring. So hang on a second.
Oh, She Still Loves You.
I'm sorry, I got that wrong. She Still Loves the Queen clip.
Yes.
And the reason I put that out there is because that steel string guitar, which you normally don't, you guys have in Incendio play gut string most of the time. So anyway, what guitar was that? That's an amazing sound. And which guitar were you using on that?
He was using the Gibson Country Western, an old guitar that he has.
A mid-60s Country Western.
And we mic it with the 4033, didn't we?
Yeah, Audio-Technica 4033 all the way on this one. And that guitar is just such a rock and roll guitar. It's very, very funny you brought that one up first, because that solo was originally an electric solo when we tracked it.
Oh, wow.
It. Yeah, and it was like a kind of a fat Telecaster thing. And I guess, you know, when we were demoing Lisa's songs, she had written all these songs. This one almost has a little bit of a country flavor, and I thought, well, let's do a tele on it. And then as the scope of the album clarified as she was building the songs and I was helping her build it, we thought, well, let's just keep all this acoustic. So that solo is almost note for note what the electric solo was, except it didn't have the sustain, so the end tails out a little bit, you know, on notes, as opposed to on the electric solo was more like sustainy kind of stuff.
I don't know. That's pretty sustainy, and those bends are pretty radical.
Yeah. Oh, that's just funny.
It just sounds killer. Those bends are just really, really, really nice.
I think we've said repeatedly to each other, we have two main guitars that you're going to kind of, I think, focus on for that. It's the Gibson Country Western model, which was at the lower end of their I think, of the lower end of their offerings in the mid-60s. You know, they're
what kind of body is it?
It's a dreadnought.
Oh, it's a deep.
But it's, you know, it's, you know, you have the Hummingbird, you have those giant kind of guitars. This one is, the appointments are not, there really aren't any special appointments to it. The tuners are relatively kind of, you know,
the little white tuners, probably the
exactly breakers. Exactly those.
It's hard to keep it in tune.
Actually, it's got a kind of a little warp to the top and stuff like that, but it just has this rock and roll thing.
Yeah, nice sound to it.
Yeah.
So you said you mentioned you used the Audio Technica 4033. Where did when you record that guitar? Where do you place it in the?
When we record in mono, we place it right close to the 12th fret, just slightly back. I don't know. You know, we 6 inches, maybe a little further.
Yeah, and sometimes face the mic just a little bit toward the sound hole, but you don't want to get too much sound hole boom. So I think both of us, we play. It's a matter of kind of getting it there because we self-engineer a lot of the time. And then just, if I look at her, it's rotated a little more this way. She'll look at me and say, you know, cheat it a little more towards the neck side until she hears what she's happy with, and then it goes. So we've got it down to now a science between Incendio and all these, and these tracks, certainly getting it in the right place. And we used to do more stereo stuff, but...
I was telling Jeff, when I recorded Nascent for Bert Lambs from the California Guitar Trio, his Bach CD, which we got a tremendous review in
Pro Audio
magazine. I used the 4033, I'm pretty sure, on the 12th fret, and I used the Sound Deluxe by The Bridge. And he recorded it, that's all on steel string and in the that Fripp tuning. And that was a great sound.
The secret, the color for the guitar craft,
yeah,
secret tuning.
But yeah, that was a complete solo guitar. There was nothing else, and that was a wonderful sound.
But for the most part, you were telling me that you record your guitar tracks mono.
Yeah, we do now. We didn't used to, but we do now.
We came back. It's just, you know, apart from phase, which you can certainly deal with, I think part of the sound that we like to work on is so many layers of stuff, whether it's synth or whether it's piano, and you just know it's much easier to mix, particularly if you get a good solid sound. You can place it a little right, place it a little left, and it's nice and solid. Whereas you get, you know, the stereo guitar thing is beautiful, but also a really nice mono guitar seems to just sit a little easier.
It's really thick. A stereo guitar, you get very thick, and with us using so many even with this...
Pianos, drums.
Yeah, so much.
You have a lot of layers in this.
Always.
You get too much low end, which we have to roll off anyway, to have the other thing, to have that pop out and to have space for the other instruments.
Right.
And the mono guitars is fine.
I just want to mention this. I know we're going through a lot of clips really fast. We're going to post some of these clips up on our webpage. And also, too, this show is free for downloads. You can get it later on iTunes, and it'll be on the LA Talk Radio site under our page. I recommend you download it and listen to this thing. If you can, listen to it in headphones because there's a lot going on. And the layering of the guitars is really genius. That's a lot of their sound, is how they pull all these guitars and how they counterpoint each other. And feel free to download this. It's free, can't beat the price, but it's something you're going to want to listen to and really take a listen to because it's really nice. Also, too, I made a mistake. The name of the last clip that we played is She Still Loves the Queen, and you got a response for that. I want to let the people know about that.
I did. I wrote that song for my mom because we played it for her at her memorial a couple of years ago. And because although we have been out in this country for a very long time, my mom's very much loved the Queen.
She's Anglophile.
She was Anglophile and very much into her English roots. She still has a picture of the Queen on her bedroom wall, which is still there. So anyway, after my mom passed and we finished the CD, I sent a copy of it with a letter to the Queen explaining how much my mother loved her and always kept up on what was happening, and sent her the song. And I got a response from the lady in waiting saying, I can't remember specifically, but how touched the Queen was that I would write her as such. And so it was thrilling. I got a letter from the Queen.
Cool. The Queen has that album, that CD sitting in her player.
Yeah, exactly. She probably listens to an iPod.
That's really cool.
The Union Jack on it, yeah.
Now, I'm going to play another thing, and I'll explain why. This is called Just a Dream. I want to play, and also too, I want to mention before I play this clip, the albums, this album and the other album that we're going to play later for the Red Mystics, I pulled clips of the guitars because I wanted to talk about the guitars. They're not instrumental albums. There's actually a lot of singing in it. I just pulled the stuff because I wanted to ask you guys questions. But I don't want to give them the wrong impression. There's a lot of beautiful vocal work, and there's a bunch of orchestration and interesting stuff throughout the whole album. But anyway, here's Just a Dream. Presume that's the Gibson?
No.
No.
That's an old Taylor that we have.
Oh, wow.
That's got a really unique sound. It's a small body. It's a much chimier guitar, and you can hear it.
The overtones that come off the guitar are really, really amazing. Jim, when he records, has another one. I think it's a good, I can't remember what it is, but it has that same quality of having so many overtones that sometimes it almost, is counter, it's too rich and it doesn't sit in the track right. And that's more for like chording. And the Taylor has that sometimes in certain registers, but once again, sitting and playing with position where it's not, okay, that we got a little bit of the chime off, we got the body of the sound right. And so that's always, that's where it's really nice, you know, for me to engineer her or her to engineer me, and we try to do that as much as possible, so they can listen and play. One of us can listen and play around and say, move a little to the left, move a little to the right, so you get body, chime, not too much boom, not too many overtones, but enough to sit right in the track. And so we will always alternate between the...
And again, that's an old Taylor. The newer ones don't necessarily sound like that, but I was lucky enough to have a girlfriend of mine was selling it, so
I
snatched it up.
Well, one thing I would say, too, is there's a pretty fascinating thing there to go back to read on the old... I guess Taylor is a Fender subsidiary now, I think, right? Taylor?
No. Taylor's
on its own?
Yep.
Fender San Diego.
That's one of the companies that Fender has not bought.
Yet.
No. I don't think they will. Taylor's doing fine on its own.
They had something where years ago, I think in the 70s or 80s, boy, I should have read this up, but they had this thing where they were built in San Diego, and then there was another place they were built in Encinitas or whatever it was. And so people tend to date their Taylors based on where they were built in those different workshops. And I'm pretty sure that the one we have that Lisa bought, that is a smaller body Taylor, is from that original first run, that original first workshop where the guy was really... you know, working
involved
to make those rides.
Right.
So, and it's just a stunning guitar. And there's some certainly beautiful Taylors now. A good friend of ours has a Jewel model Taylor, which records stunningly.
Well, one of the earliest Taylor users was Neil Young.
Oh,
Neil
I didn't
Young
know
had
that.
A 12-string back in his solo, early solo career, right around Buffalo Springfield. He used a 12-string.
Oh, that Taylors are that early?
It was like
they're about 35, 40 years old, I believe, actually.
Yeah. It wasn't Buffalo Springfield. I don't think he had it then, but he had it, I think, in the very early 70s he had one. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I read that in the...
So out of curiosity on that, Taylor, does it actually... this is the one thing I was surprised when I actually took the factory tour down in San Diego. I did not know that they actually bolt on all their necks. Is it a bolt-on neck? I mean,
The one we have?
Yeah.
No.
No, it's glued, really. You sure?
Oh, yeah.
Because you can look inside, and it's the screws are inside of it. It's not like a Fender bolt-on. It's really strange how they do it. It's pretty neat, though, how it works.
I don't think so, but I'll have to go back and look. I wouldn't have...
You would have never thought that the Taylors are bolt-on, but they're actually all screwed on, every single neck.
Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, the first guy that I was aware of Taylor was Leo Kottke. He used them a lot.
Oh, man. There's a...
That's when I was first aware of it. But
yeah, there's a Kottke 12-string.
Yeah.
I think Taylor makes their new one that tunes the C sharp or something like that. What a stunning guitar!
Yeah.
Oh man, I would love that. That and the Brent Mason PRS that I saw at NAMM. One of the few guitars I like. You know, we talk about guitars and all those kind of things, and it's nice to have this, nice to have that, but those are the two or three that are on my hit list.
Yeah.
Well, you know, an interesting thing about that song, we recorded it, but I recorded it back when I was in a group called Red Van Gogh, mm-hmm. back in 90. And so for anybody that's interested, if you happen to go to iTunes and look up Red Van Gogh, look up Just a Dream, and Larry Weber is playing that same part on an old Loudon, which sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That's another great guitar.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
But that I noticed that the thing that that besides the brilliant bending and sustain in that clip is when you go to the lower register, it has a neat sound. It cuts through.
Yeah, it's piano.
And I'm like, I was thinking, like, did he boost that? And I was listening, like, no, it sounds like he didn't really have to do too much. Did you guys, is it pretty much flat that you record, or do you compress, or did you do any
No, we never compress when we record.
So that isn't compressed, because it's got a sustain-y kind of fat sound.
We may have compressed it after the fact,
No.
So.
On the acoustics, we try to stay, because you can always hear as great an acoustic it is, you can always hear it pushing a little bit. So it would be very rare. We never, almost never.
You know, what we do when we mix, if we don't like, if things are popping out too much, instead of compressing, generally, once in a while we compress, generally we go through and we draw it in, we automate, so things come down a little bit, so it still has those overtones.
Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it breathes, and it doesn't sound like it's being squashed.
Yeah.
And you can do that now. I liken it to handcrafting stuff, certainly with this album, with Incendio. You've got so much flexibility now. There's a certain sound to putting a compressor, you know, over something that's been recorded. But acoustic, it always sounds jagged to me, and to Lee's as well. So it's always like, that sounds wrong. Let's just paint it.
Yeah, because I remember the guitar player, Peter White for Al Stewart, mm-hmm. his sound that Alan Parsons, I'm pretty sure that was compressed, but it was really clean. It was just in your face.
They're probably using, you know, pretty high-end compressors and like maybe taking a DI. There's so many different ways you can do it or record with it. Ours, you know, our whole thing started with doing music for TV, and we simply didn't have a lot of access to different things to use. So it's like, okay, it's in your hands. Let's make it happen. Not too, you know, not too loud, not too soft. There's a certain sound to it. Now we have access to different things like that, and particularly with, like, I think people that have done a lot of rock production, they're used to say, well, we're going to put in this channel, put a little EQ. I know what we're doing. You know, I know what I'm doing. I'm putting the compression on the signal chain, and you print that, you know, to audio, and that's great. That's perfect. Tends to not be how we work.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question I have for you. So recording home studio, what would you say if somebody wanted to do home studio recording on the cheap? What would you recommend? Like, what's the one mic you should have that's going to cover most everything? What, you know, how should you record it, in your opinion, that's going to be affordable? And what's the best way to do a home studio without, you know, going off and building a houseboat like David Gilmour and floating off in Hawaii?
God, there's so much.
This show is going till midnight, right?
There's a lot of choices.
I would say, well, the Audio Technica 4033 is an amazing mic. And it was just written up in some magazine, too.
It's fairly affordable, right? It's like $300-$400.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's great. I mean, you can use it on so many. I recorded my vocals on the 4033. I think we've used it on cello. We've used it on violin.
On the vocals for this CD?
On the vocals for this CD, on the guitars. You know, a home studio now is so different than it used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, DP is incredible. We use everything we use.
That's a digital performer.
Digital performer. You have to just, with that one mic, learn how to place it and try it on a lot of different things and work with the placement. The room is important. Trying to get not too much room
or
sound.
Minimizing that sound, sure.
Go into a closet if you don't have a lot of options.
What do you guys be so on this last clip that we played, you're using the 4033. Mm-hmm. What's your preamp?
Avalon 737 SP. We use for drums and a lot of different things. We do use the Mackie stuff, and we've used it on so many different sessions. And people are like, oh, your drums sound great. What are you using? You know, it would be great to have an API lunchbox. It would be great to have Neve and all that stuff. At the end of the day, that the Mackie stuff is fantastic. The Avalon, certainly single channel, 737 with all the tubes in it is great. The one thing I would also really highly recommend, because, you know, going back to Scott's original question and kind of tying it in, it's, you know, I don't think people should be overwhelmed by, there are so many choices, but at the end of the day, and going back to, you know, as I said, Jeff has known me since the fifth grade, sixth grade, has been a mentor to me, and showed me the magic of, you know, hey, we've got a couple of 58s, 57s, know where to play stuff, and know how to make it sound right. And you evolve and you learn a little bit through that. So on the one hand, I think you have to learn how to use what you have and then build gradually. On the other hand, like Lisa said, the 4033 is a great condenser mic to have that we've seen used in so many applications, particularly, you know, with Incendium, we're doing festivals. There are a lot of bluegrass groups. We tend to be in a genre where everyone wants to hear pickers, but a lot of the groups are bluegrass groups, or they're Tommy Emmanuel or some of that. Some people are mic'd, some people are go DI. And the 4033 is like a standard for bluegrass groups where everybody's getting around one mic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's the mic. And I was like, oh, that's really cool, because it gets the detail, has a lot of air. And then, you know, get your 57, your, sure, your FSM 57s and 58s. And use those in particular applications and get them to sound right. Now, going one further, you talked about the Avalon 737. The most dramatic change that we have experienced in terms of, well, we're going to do this mod and see if it's, you know, going to work out right. There's a company out of Chicago called Black Lion Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And they will do mods and upgrades on a whole bunch of, like, Digi stuff, RME stuff. Precinus. They don't do Precinus. They do mods on a few other things, and they do mods on the Mo 2828. That has been the most dramatic change in sound that we did. We did their upgrade, where they upgrade the analog signal path and all that, but they have a timing box, and you know, a digital clocking box. Everybody had for years, Big Ben. You know, I was going to the top studios, they'd have a Big Ben clocking box. Well, what does that do, and why is that important? I'm here to tell you. A lot of the richness of, I think, the last couple of albums that we've had has been that Black Lion clocking box and improving the audio path on the.
Did you use a Big Ben before?
No,
because I have a Big Ben in my studio.
Well, we read stuff. All of us in the room, we read stuff, and this is better than this and whatever. Man, the difference when we got the Black Lion mod and that clock box was fantastic in the bass. The imaging on the top, the air, as we
right.
You know, has been amazing. So that's something eventually you can move into. But at first, you know, just get a mic, get a preamp, get something simple, and learn to work with it. The Mackie stuff is tremendous.
Yeah, you know, no, that's true.
The Onyx preamps.
You didn't use ribbon on this album at all, right?
No.
Because I remember you were playing with ribbons before.
Yeah, and you know, I think
did we not use it at all? That ribbon mic. I remember breaking it out for something recently, but I.
Yeah, it wasn't for either of these projects. Yeah. So I would love to have like a Royer or an AEA.
Oh, I think we used the ribbon mic on either the cello for when Peggy came over and played, or on the violin. I can't remember.
Possibly.
But we used it on one of those, the ribbon mic.
Who played violin on this? I don't have a cut of it for the show.
Oh.
Was it Novi?
No, at the very end. This is a great story, actually.
I went back to Sicily to see where my father was from.
Mm-hmm.
And so we met distant relatives, and we met a lot of musicians, and we met a violinist. And my father also played violin. He made his living as an artist, but he also played violin. So I met a guy named Massimo. I can't remember his last name. But I wanted him to play on this. I thought, how fun. So I sent him the track to Sicily, to Avila, and I sent him the music. And then I said, record it, because I knew they had a studio, because we'd gone down there and jammed with them. And so he recorded it and sent it back. And I was like, great. Now, I knew there was a language barrier, but I kept going on to Google Translate. And I said, okay, good. Now, improvise at the end. And he'd write back, he'd go, yes, improvisation is wonderful. But he wouldn't improvise. So I finally got Joe Craven to do the improvisation at the end. So it's both of them.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. Yeah.
And Joe has become a tremendous friend to us and to Incendio. He was with David Grisman for like 17 years and has just become an incredible music educator and somebody that's very, very inspiring to us. So we were honored to have him on the CD.
But I have no idea what either one of them recorded on. But.
Oh, okay. No, that's all right. I'm going to play another clip, and I want everybody to listen to how that open, airy sound that you guys were talking about, and also the counterpoint. There's a lot of things going on. This is the intro to Just Out of Reach. And take a listen to this. It's pretty interesting, the interplay between the instruments here. As much stuff. There's a lot of synth going on in there, and there's a couple of guitars playing little finger-picking things. Pretty open sound. Now, that guitar, gut string, right? Which guitar were you using on there?
I think that's your Maldonado.
Yeah, Maldonado.
And the 40...
Oh, absolutely, 40-33 yeah. All the way. But there's a little the finger-pick part in back.
Yeah, is it the Taylor or?
I think it is. Yeah,
the Taylor.
We always kind of, is it more rocking and does it need to be like speak out a little more and be a little barky? No guitar does that like the Gibson, like the Gibson acoustics. They just have, it's not a Martin sound. It's not a
no.
You know, they all have their own thing, and that one really barks. The Taylor is more pianistic, so for finger picking that seems to work well. And then we use a lot of the Spectrasonic stuff is phenomenal. Omnisphere.
And Stylus.
Stylus, Trillian.
And actually we use a lot of Reason as well, because we can go into Reason and manipulate the sound separately. It doesn't take up a lot of CPU, and there's a lot of great sounds on that.
Yeah, Reason is a software, just to let everybody know.
Yes.
That works within the shell of Digital Performer.
And by getting a lot of that openness is, besides the EQ, it's a lot in panning, you know, so you have each thing in its own space so that each instrument will have its space to speak out so you can hear each line that you're playing.
Are you using any special reverb, or you're just using the DP reverbs?
The CSR plates. CSR company, and then occasionally Realverb from Waves.
And the Renaissance verb.
The Renaissance
that's
verb,
a
yeah, on Waves
one.
As well.
Yeah, no, those are, yeah. You're not using any sampled rooms or anything like that, convolution?
No, convolution verb.
All right, I'm going to play one more clip, and then we're going to take a break and get into phase two of that. And also, too, at that time, we'll start taking calls. It's 323-203-0815. But this is another one of my favorite little clips from your album. It's got a progressive edge to it a little bit, and the name of the song is Count Germain. It just harmonically goes in some interesting places. Let me play that for you. Very interesting interplay with the guitar and the piano. But to me, JP knows me. I'm a big progressive rock fan, and that has a very progressive rock feel to it.
Well, let's let the cat out of the bat. I mean, I've known Jeff since I was in the fifth or sixth grade, and he's definitely been a mentor. And as far as layering parts and all that, it's something that Lisa and I like to do anyway, but I would be lying if I didn't say that Jeff had a pretty profound influence in making some of that happen. So I think when we hear back some of those things, it's like, WWJ. How would Jeff do? So there's a lot of layering of parts and different things like that. And once again, that's the Taylor.
That's the Taylor, but the arpeggio part I think is on the Gibson.
Hmm. We definitely like to even though I say like Gibson is rock and roll, if we know that the Taylor is going to be the front part, even just to get the tuning right, because it's an older guitar, it's a little weird. We will use it for contrast, so they're not getting in each other's tonal range. That's another thing. It's like making sure that they are in tune as possible. That's so important. I mean, we are tuning between takes, tuning like with stop a take. It's a little out of tune because things emerge, resonances emerge between the instruments. And you well know this. You both well know this. That come apart, so Lisa will stop me. It's a little out. We use everything on there with the exception of a friend Lau Tizer playing a keyboard on one tune. I played all the piano on that, and that's like on that tune or some of the others, and it's all Ivory. Right. Ivory's a tremendous program, and so there's a lot of air, and so to match that realism, the guitars sit really nice with them as long as they are in tune. And the same thing with the electrics we're going to talk about a little bit later. Those have been Featonized for the most part, had the Buzz Featon thing on
right,
them.
Right, yeah.
And the things that emerge from that are really, really special.
The drums were programmed because that kick drum. Now, going out on the air, there is a compressor that runs through the whole thing, but it's like punches you in the chest, so it's a pretty interesting sound. But yes, when I used to do session work, I used to bring several acoustics because just using a different guitar, you know, using an Ovation and doubling it,
it makes it
easier to get that much of separation, and you don't have to do as many EQ games.
Separation and a full sound, because the chiming is happening in different frequencies and for different guitars.
Yeah.
So I've got a chime in the high mids here. I've got a little more of an interesting thing happening in the low mids here, and it makes for a very full track, even though they're very simple parts.
Yes. No. And that's one I recommend. Take a listen again to that track. It's really interesting what they're doing. There's a lot of interplay in there. Okay, we're going to take a break and just do a station break and play a couple of things, and we're going to come back and we're going to do part two of this interview, and we'll be taking calls. Okay, so hang on a second. We'll be right back.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Scott here from the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, and I have an exciting contest to tell you about. We will be giving away a Big Muff Pie with a tone liquor option on April 29th when the legendary Mike Matthews and the good folks from Electroharmonics are our guests. This pedal is autographed by Mike Matthews and sounds killer. To be a winner, like our Facebook page and visit our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com, and leave a comment on this contest story. Make sure to tune in Monday, April 29th to see if you're the winner. Take it away, Mike.
Rock and roll!
The Flow here. You're listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show on latalkradio.com.
Clips of the Red Mystics, Back in Your Arms Again is the name of the album. That's JP doing what I've always known him to play. That's how I always identify with him, as playing as a blues rock guitarist. Anyway, also to welcome back, we're going to be taking calls. I have somebody on the line right now, but I just wanted to ask real quick, what did you use on that song?
That song is my Warmoth Strat running through Amplitude. There's no amp involved.
That's a
simulation, and that was kind of the purpose of the CD too, is to run through a bunch of different, it was a playground to run through a bunch of different amp simulations, And on that one, I want to say it was kind of their more blowout gainy stuff, which is gainier than I usually use, but I want to give it a try. So
that's cool. Okay, hold on. Let's try we got a call. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, Larry.
Larry.
And I'm calling from Highland Park.
Larry from Highland Park. Do you have a question for JP or Lisa?
I do.
Hi, Larry.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering, were you guys part of this, like, Steely Dan cover band back in the 90s?
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
We were. We were part of Pretzel Logic. Well, actually, that was JP's group, and that's how we met. He needed a bass player.
Excellent. I'm just a big fan of yours. I was just wondering if you were one of the same, and I'm enjoying listening to your show tonight.
Oh, very cool. I thought for a second you were actually probably Larry the drummer in that group.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Cheese Master.
Well, you could tell them all the story of why you two were doing the interview together. Sure.
That is actually very true. We were playing together in a Steely Dan cover band, and we needed a bass player at the time, and it was Larry. How out do you want me to go with this, Larry? We were both working at MCA Records at the time, back in the day, and we had this little thing that we put together. We said we needed a bass player. Larry recommended Lisa, and I saw her pretty much the first time and was slack-jawed. I was like, oh, my God. She's really, really pretty, and she plays her butt off, and it was really cool. So, that was what started. That was like 19 years ago. It was a long, long time ago.
So we get the appeal of what you liked about Lisa, but what was the appeal with you? I'm just kidding.
No!
Singer!
I have been asking myself.
We all asked that.
Yeah. But Larry is a phenomenal drummer and now is back in the Midwest somewhere. He is a graduate of Blitz in Bloomington, the university out there in Bloomington.
Indiana University School of Music, but yes. Actually back in town, guys, so we'll grab lunch.
Oh, wow. Highland Park. When you were saying, I was like, Highland Park, Illinois? Where is that?
Well, give us a call again.
or give your number out over the air. That would be the smarter thing.
Anyway, guys, have a great show. I'm listening.
Oh, great to hear from you, Larry. You take care, man.
Thanks again for calling. Bye bye. Okay, anyway, let me get in it. Since we're right here, I'm going to play another track, another one of my favorites from the album. This is the intro to Papa Was a Rolling Stone, which is kind of an interesting cut. And now we know why you hired Lisa. That bass is so solid.
Oh, by the way, for any bass players out there, I'm playing a Hennewinkle, Pete Hennewinkle. He's a luthier here in Cyprus, down by Orange County. Makes phenomenal basses, just incredible. Bartolini pickups, and I'm playing through the Avalon, and that's generally
No amp. Directly.
No. I always play direct, and I usually go through the Avalon. Sometimes I may have been going through my 220, the SWR old 220. I may have been going through that, but generally I go through the Avalon direct with that bass, and it's Active Electronics, 18 volt, just fabulous. I couldn't
solid
say
bass.
Enough about Hennewinkle.
Yeah, it tracks really, really nicely. And excuse me, like she said, the Avalon versus
he's all choked up from that bass part does that to him.
Yeah. Generally, I go through the Avalon, once in a while through the 220, and that's a fabulous amp as well.
Yeah, but the 220 is a pre Fender. It's an older SWR. And anytime we talk, like the bass heads will talk, and Lisa will talk with them. And she's like, yeah, sometimes I track to the 220 and go, oh, one of those. So that's one of those secret weapon kind of like heads that, it's like they talk about Walter Woods or something like that.
Yeah, both of them are tube. So
yeah,
you get
killer.
That nice warm sound. It's nice and punchy.
What were you using? What guitar is that?
That is Lise's Ibanez Artist. It's the same kind of thing that Schofield does. It's their 335 knockoff, and it's from the early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Killer guitar.
Yes.
Yes.
Ibanez will appreciate it. So 335, not, no, actually, it's their own thing. Nobody get all up in arms. It's just the most versatile, killer guitar, low action, wonderful pickups. And to do kind of, that was a kind of a B.B. King thing. All of that was guitar rig, Native Instruments guitar rig, with the Fender model. Just everything set to 10, the diming, you know, dime everything.
That's great. Sounds like an amp.
They did a tremendous job.
But since I'm going to play another clip since you're doing a kind of a funk thing. This is a song called Every Night.
Mm-hmm.
This is the opening to it. So what are you using there?
That's the Warmoth Strat through the Mesa Boogie. So when anything on this album that used a real amp is a Mesa Boogie Mark I that was once again something Lisa bought. Is anybody seeing a trend? I don't own any of my own like good equipment. Lisa
bought. Oh, you got that Marshall.
That's Lisa's too.
Oh. No. Okay.
He only married me for my gear.
Yeah, that's for the amps. Yeah. We got the Mesa Boogie Mark I like sometime in the late 90s, and somebody put 6V6s on it, and I didn't know you were supposed to run half power, and everything blew, and it was kind of a nightmare. They put 6L6s back in it, and it just kills, and it's got the secret, I think, of all of those, the guitar emulation programs, their waves and everything, is how do they sound on mid-tones when you're not fully blown out. They got that kind of gain saturation thing. And when they're really clean, you can get them, turn up the treble, put EQ on them. But to get that real middle thing where it's a little bit of a breakup, or I would even call it, even though it's not a funk sound, like a Jimmy Page sound, that is not, it's not full blowout distortion, but it's certainly not clean either. That's where I think a lot of those plugins get a little weird. They don't sound right. And these are pretty cool. But in this one, I was like, I'm not even going to mess with this. To get that kind of, mm-hmm. There's a little bit of saturated sound, even though it sounds kind of clean like funk. I want to specifically do that. And for that, I'm pretty sure Lisa ran a 57 into the Avalon.
Oh,
that's our usual signal chain for that.
That's pretty cool. Let me play another clip. This is another intro. The title song, Back in Your Arms Again. It's pretty interesting, and it's really solid. Nice sound. What was that?
Strat through the boogie, blown out with, I believe, on the front end, the pedal that you introduced me to, Ramey, Mike Ramey.
Which one is that?
The Fender. I always
that's the Ram pedal.
The Ram, yeah. There's the Ram too. There's a couple of Mike Ramey's making these pedals for anybody's out there that want to check out. He's making beautiful stuff. I tend to lean towards Fender voiced stuff, and that match with a boogie, which is essentially a blown out Fender circuit, mm-hmm. is just fantastic. I mean, I love Santana. I love that blown out kind of gainy thing. But those combinations to get that kind of dirty Stevie Ray or just past Stevie Ray thing, it's just a wonderful combination.
And you know, didn't we have the amp for that session pretty much in the back porch?
Yeah.
Facing at the washing machine with the 57 in front of it.
In a concrete room, just so loud. Oh, man, just because. Because why not? Really.
It sounded killer.
The best possible thing is if you marry a fellow guitarist, because then it's like guitar purchases are not questioned. They're often encouraged. The best thing in the world is when your wife will tell you, it's just not loud enough. It's a magical thing.
That is.
Yeah. You need a little more gain there, JP.
I love you.
So what are the speakers inside of that amp?
This is an important question.
Didn't think this would stump you.
No, it's not. It's not a Black Widow.
It is. It's not.
No, I can't tell you what the speakers are, but I can tell you this. That when I took it into Boogie to be repaired, their first react, because it's like a serial number 17 or something like that of the reissues that happened in the mid 70s, and they go, "Oh, you got the whatever that was." I guess they had hired a speaker company to do the speakers for them when they first started, and then they had a problem with that speaker company, but everybody wanted those particular speakers. I'm hearing this second or third hand or whatever. So they brought in somebody afterwards and those were the go-to speakers, but this is apparently some special speaker that was only in the first 100 or less than 100 models or something like that. And so that's something I need to research that I only found out recently. So it's not what the standard thing is.
The first Boogie, I know that the one he made for Santana was a JBL.
Yeah. Right, but this would have been what they started when they restarted the reissues, because I think this amp is from either 87 or 88. Mm-hmm. I think it's like serial number 17 or something.
Well, luckily, when you blew it up those three times, you only blew up the tubes and not the speaker.
Well, you know what? It took out quite a few circuits. We didn't need a new transformer, but that was a bad day.
Yeah, I know. I played that at your wedding. I played my Les Paul through that thing. It was fun.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When it's cranked, it gets it's a special little screaming amp.
We're at the end of the hour. Before we close it up, I want to put out some information. Also, too, we should give a question out for. We have some albums here, both the Red Mystics and Lisa's solo album. Do you guys have a question to put out to the people? And what we can do is they can respond to us. Send it. Do you want to send it to Scott at theflowguitarenthusiast.com?
Sure.
Or Scott at flowguitarenthusiast.com.
Yeah.
So they're talking. While they're setting up the question, I'm going to tell you some information. Of course, JP and Lisa are known for Incendio. Their website is www.incendioband.com. But if you want to hear more and learn more about what JP and Lisa are doing outside of the band, their website is www.carbeduran.com. That's CARBEDURAND. Also, their Facebook pages. There's John Pierre Duran. There's the official Incendio band page. And there's Lisa Carbe. And there's two of them. There's your Lisa Carbe and there's Lisa Carbe.
Facebook.
Yeah, there's two of them. There's
the fan page and then the regular Lisa Carbe page.
Yeah, just go to Lisa Carbe and you'll find it. And then also, because of Incendio, the third member who will be, actually, we can announce it'll be on May 6th. Jim Stubblefield will be on. He has his own site and Jim Stubblefield guitarist. So I thought I would mention those two.
Absolutely.
So go ahead and give us the question. I know we're...
what famous rock band did Lisa play with prior to Incendio and prior to me meeting her? Because I don't think it was mentioned.
Okay. All right. So if you have the answer of that, send it to Scott at flowguitarenthusiast.com, and we will notify you of the winner.
Can we give a hint?
No.
No.
So I'd start playing, or after we got to get out of here. But where can they hear you guys locally? Where's your next gig?
Incendio is coming back to full flight and playing all over the place. I want to say,
Catalina's. We're going to
Catalina's Jazz Bar and Grill. It's our first time at Catalina's Jazz Club in Hollywood on Sunset near Highland. That's Tuesday, April 30th. We'll also be down at Miramonte Winery in Temecula. And this coming weekend, 3 days at the Indian Wells Art Festival, we'll be out there performing, and our good friends, the Lau Tizer duo, will be playing out there with Jeff Coleman on guitar.
But for all you local people, please come out to Catalina's, because that's the closest one.
Tuesday,
we'd love to see you out there.
Tuesday, April 30th, our Catalina's debut. Please come out. That would be great.
Thank you, guys. It's truly a pleasure to have you guys on the show.
Yeah, thanks
for
having us.
Thank you, guys.
You will be back. We will be doing an Incendio show. We will let you know more about that once we have the date locked. Next week, our guest will be a friend of mine from, I went to school with him at SC, the music school, a classical guitar player, and also a big band, swing band, jazz player. So it should be pretty interesting. I'm going to leave you with a clip from the lead solo from Red House, from the Red Mystics, and the name of the album is Back in Your Arms Again. Okay? And thank you, guys. Good night.